safety net for pensions.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. A bill designed to protect the pensions of American workers is headed for the president's desk. Last night, the Senate passed the bill 93-5. It requires companies to fund their pension plans, and it prevents them from bailing out and shifting that burden to taxpayers. But senators failed to approve another high-profile bill. That one combined a hike in the minimum wage with a cut in the estate tax. 4 years ago, Congress passed a measure that required port workers to carry tamper-proof photo IDs. The program was supposed to be in place by the end of this year, but there are problems. Marketplace's Hillary Wickay reports.
Imagine a security card carried by about 750,000 longshoremen, truck drivers, and rail workers, the people who make the nation's ports hum. But tests on a prototype show it sometimes wrongly says a worker is a security risk, among other problems. Mark McDonald is with the Pacific Maritime Association. He says his group is a little concerned that the much-anticipated program might be delayed.
But we are more concerned that the program is orchestrated correctly.
Terminal operators will have to install the necessary infrastructure. One Virginia port estimates it could cost them nearly $6 million, and that doesn't count the potential cost of slowing down business. The cards themselves will cost each worker about $150. In Washington, I'm Hillary Wickay for Marketplace.
A little rally on Wall Street. The Dow climbed a third of a percent to 11,242. The Nasdaq gained two-thirds and wound up at 2092. Today, investors will react to July's employment report. I know one company that will have fewer jobs. AOL says it's cutting a quarter of its workforce. And with its new business model, AOL will depend on advertising instead of subscriptions. With all these changes, Jeff Tyler looks at where the company might be headed.
Training wheels for the internet. That's one description of the old AOL. But what about going forward?
Basically, AOL is trying to reinvent itself as Yahoo.
That's Jupiter Research analyst David Card. He says AOL creates good programming, but most consumers wouldn't know it. Folks using Movie Phone or MapQuest may not even realize that they've entered AOL territory.
They snuck you in through the side door. The difference is when they were the world's leading access company, they got you in the front door because every time you logged on, they were very able to guide you and steer you to the content and services that they were putting up in front of you. So they don't have that position without the access business.
To compensate, company suits have banked on raising the profile of AOL innovations, like its new search engine for movies. Similar attractions aim to reconnect the brand with web surfers who have outgrown training wheels. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Here's a sign of the times. A hip clothing store in Britain fired one of its workers by text message. Her boss at the Blue Banana says the girl's phone was off and texting is part of the youth culture. The girl says it's a double standard because she had to call in sick. This is Marketplace. And now for another installment of the Job Files. Maybe it's time for a haircut.
My name is Joshua McBride. I'm a hairstylist and a salon owner. The first time I ever cut hair was when I was 15 years old. My mother came home from the hair salon and got a really horrible haircut and handed me the scissors and away I went. I think people don't like what their hair does naturally and they're trying to fight against it. I know because I have curly hair and wanting it straight for many, many years. So one of my favorite things to do is to help people love their natural texture and love what they have. It's crazy how I have become a therapist to my clients. People really let go when they come in and you start touching their head. All their problems, I take them on.
The Job Files were produced by Karen Ness. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reuters. The facts without spin, as they happen. Reuters helps you stay in the know. Now, the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship, on the web at kauffman.org.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. We could be on the verge of history in Cuba. Cubans call it El Cambio, the change. If Fidel Castro dies, the business climate in Cuba could certainly change dramatically. But there's one big hurdle before that happens. From our America's desk at WLRN, Dan Gretsch reports.
David Chihulian grew up in Miami, the eldest son of a Cuban immigrant. The first time he visited his extended family in Cuba, he was 29 and a filmmaker. He learned then the true extent of his family's desperation.
My cousin, she's a first cousin who has two kids, at one point took me aside, and she was quite nervous about asking me this, but she asked if we could get married because she wanted to come over to the United States.
Chihulian decided to leave his cousin in Cuba. He also left filmmaking to become an attorney. He felt that would put him in a better position to help sort out the legal mess that will inevitably follow in the wake of Castro's regime. He says the first problem will be figuring out who really owns what.
You have all these properties throughout Cuba that, in a sense, have two owners. They're original owners who have their deeds and are likely here in the United States, and then the new owners who got new deeds. You're going to have two different innocent owners coming to the table and saying that they are the rightful owner of these properties.
When news hit Miami's Little Havana Monday that Fidel Castro was gravely ill, cars jammed Calle Ocho in celebration. But if Cuba were to reopen for business, this impromptu fiesta could quickly turn into gridlock. Already the U.S. government certified nearly 6,000 claims of confiscated property in Cuba. Including interest, they're worth an estimated $6 billion. Miami sociologist Dario Moreno says property disputes will jam up potential investment on the island.
No one wants to invest in a property that is under dispute. So I think that's going to be a tangle. And I think that's why you're not going to see investment in tobacco, sugar, the old sectors of the Cuban economy.
And it'll be hard to sort out competing legitimate claims from bogus ones. Miami Herald columnist Andres Oppenheimer.
Because there's an old Cuban joke that says that if you put together all the sugar mills that Cuban exiles own, Cuba's territory is about China's size.
The Helms-Burton Act, passed by Congress in 1996 to strengthen the embargo on the island, will likely delay an economic opening even more. It requires any democratic successor to the Castro government to settle billions of dollars in seized property claims before the U.S. can lift the embargo. Meanwhile, the communist government has its own grievances. Cuba says the U.S. owes it $70 billion. That's the total economic impact of America's 44-year embargo on the island. In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The United States Senate is working.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.